camp down to Birkendal Race Camp. And once again, it's Chris Patton and his trusty companion.
Pugela, Pugela Levea. It's the 24th of August 2016. We're driving from Skukuza Rest Camp to Birkendal Rest Camp.
That is correct. We're just stopping at the major crossroads in the park outside Skukuza Camp. It's got a signpost with all the distances to all the other main camps in the southern section of the park. For those of you who don't know, who may be listening overseas, August is winter time in South Africa, and Kruger is a winter rainfall, is a summer rainfall, so there hasn't been substantial rain in the park for a very long time, and it's looking very arid, barren. There's no leaves on a lot of the trees, and the veld is looking very denuded and in bad need of some water. But the signpost ahead of us tells us that our destination, Birkendal, is how far?
Birkendal is 70 k's,
70 kilometers. So we're going to make two stops en route, one on top of Matakanyani Hill, which is a lookout point that allows you to leave your vehicle and gives you a wonderful vista over the surrounding veld all around. So we'll stop there for a break, and then there's Afsal picnic site and tea room, and that is a place where once again you can get out of your car. There is a shop service, a cafeteria service. You can buy food, you can cook your picnic lunches, that sort of thing. So those are the two stop-ups we'll have, but we'll also probably see some sightings, even though it's the middle of the day right now. It's just 2 minutes before 11 o'clock, so it's not ideal game viewing time of day, because in the heat of the day that the wildlife seeks shade and are not as active, but I'm sure we'll still see one or two exciting things for us to talk about. So bear with us and enjoy the ride. Since we've left camp, the bush has been very dense and very dry, so we haven't seen too many animals out next to the road. But we've come to a bit of a clearing on the right hand side. What have we got there, Pukela? Two types of animal.
It's one female kudu and one male kudu and two male impalas. Am I correct?
You are correct. What is on the back of the kudu?
On the back of the kudu, it's a bird that it's on. What did you say? It's on.
It eats the parasites that feed on the animals. It's a red-billed oxpecker. You can see
oxpecker. Yes,
it's got red beak and then a sort of yellow eye.
Yes,
and the rest of the bird is brown.
Yes,
kudus for those. The car's going past and disturbing what we're watching. Kudus are quite big animals. They stand a meter or more above the ground at shoulder level. And some of the bulls can get up to about a meter and a half. The one closer to us is a female. They've got a browny color with thin white stripes across its side towards its rump. Pukela mentioned that the other one is a male. It's a young male, so part of a family group. Unfortunately, we're on a very busy road, so you can probably hear the passing traffic. But they're pretty chilled, despite the vehicles driving past. They haven't gone off. They're too busy browsing and grazing. Now, kudus are predominantly browsers, and you can see the male is feeding on the leaves of that low-lying bush. But the female, because the drought conditions and the vegetation is so sparse, she's eating whatever she can find. She's now feeding on some leaves, but just now she was eating some grass. So to say that kudu are exclusively browsers is not correct. They prefer to browse, prefer to eat leaves, but sometimes conditions dictate that they have to look for other food sources. The two impala are two magnificent specimens, I'm sure you'll agree. They've got a nice set of horns, both of them, and they are, even though they're much smaller than the kudu, only standing maybe about half a meter, the one ram gave the female kudu a bit of a nudge just now. You saw that and pushed her out of the way. I guess because he's male and he's filled with testosterone and she's a female, he can maybe do that. But yeah, they're nice to see them so close. Just come across our first elephant of the trip. And it's quite a young one, which suggests there's a family herd yet. There's more on this side.
There is on the left.
Yeah, we're in a breeding herd, youngsters and females, and that's probably the most dangerous that elephants can be, because the cows can be very protective, particularly if the babies are very young. And then also you get some young teenage bulls that haven't yet left the family herd that can suddenly be too charged up with testosterone and become a bit aggressive and think that they can push their weight around. But they're just merrily feeding on the veld, using their trunks to reach out and peel bark off trees. But this youngster next to us is trying to push the tree over with his weight to maybe get at the tree trunk flesh or the roots. Because in these dry conditions they need to take whatever feeding opportunity they can have. Because it's a breeding herd, I'm not going to turn the engine off, it's too risky. We might have to suddenly accelerate very quickly if one of them takes offense to us, like he's turning around, giving us the beady eye.
Yeah.
How would you describe him? How high do you think he is above the ground?
Is it 1 meter tall?
No, it's a bit more than that. He's probably 2.5-3 meters tall.
And there's the other one.
Yeah, that's one of the cows. How you tell the difference between a cow and a bull elephant if you cannot see their genitalia underneath? The cows have a very sharp angle on their forehead, so you can see a definite angle on the forehead, whereas a bull elephant has a rounded forehead. That's one way
like
to tell.
One.
Apart from the size and the presence of the male genitalia that dangles from his undercarriage. There shouldn't be any big bulls around. This will be a herd of young bulls and females and youngsters. But they're not too fast, they're just gently plucking whatever food they can find and trying to consume as much as possible. And they do, collectively they consume so much plant matter in a day, and that's why they can be very destructive, particularly when it's drought conditions, and can really do some damage to the environment. It's a leopard, yes, walking south to north at about 11 o'clock from our vehicle, probably about 20 meters into the veld. Quite a streamlined, athletic looking one. I suspect this might be a female. It's amazing that the elephants we've just been describing are probably only 50 meters away. So this cat is now stopped. It's looking intently at what lies ahead. It's a beautiful specimen.
Yeah.
Lovely pelt. Golden with its black rosettes. Look from a distance like spots. And it's got a lovely curl to its tail. It's a tall one, but it's very sleek and athletic looking. Magnificent.
So if it gets to those elephants, what's going to happen there?
Well, it's not really a threat to the elephant. It's not strong enough
to put
maybe
the elephants
it could
down.
Take maybe it could take on a youngster if it was alone, but of course an elephant isn't an elephant calf is not going to be alone.
It's now chasing a rabbit. Is that a rabbit?
Could have been. Maybe it disturbed a sleeping hare. Where's it gone? It's still picking its way through. I think if there was a hare, it would have scampered off.
You said?
Yep. I'm just going to go back to keep pace with it. There's a couple of other vehicles who are also jockeying for position. Oh, there's also, you see the elephant just behind it there in the background.
Yes.
Keep an eye on the leopard. Now the leopard's walking right into the elephant herd. But because it's not really a threat to the elephant, and the elephant aren't really a threat to it, it's not too fussed about that. Can't see it at the moment, can you?
Yes.
You can?
Right there.
So am I keeping... it stopped at the base of a tree. Oops. Car behind, but it's going the other way. It's now reversing, walking quite purposefully. Not moving further away from the road, and not moving closer. And very calm. I mean, normally a leopard this close would be very edgy and would skulk off into the veld. But this one is very comfortable with all the cars' presence. There's four cars at the moment. There's a fifth one coming up behind. And it's now out in an open clearing. Sleek.
Yeah.
So magnificent. Now it's getting towards that young elephant bull. I wonder if it will give it a hard time. Walking behind it, stopped at the base of a tree. There's a bit of shade. And it's scratching. Maybe that's part of its territorial display, which would suggest it's a male. It's just done a circle. And now he seems to be sitting down.
Yeah. I did notice that there's unusual things happening around it.
The elephant, look, he's going to be aware that there's an elephant there, but like I say, it doesn't seem too fussed at all. He's just had a yawn, showing his canines. I've decided it's a he, but I'm not 100% sure. Now it's on the move again. I've got to stop, pause. And now circling the tree again. I think now there's a couple more cars, so it's maybe getting a little bit irritated with us, because it's now heading away from us into the veld. Building up to that purposeful stroll. Walking right up to those other elephants. Oh, the one cow is getting a little bit edgy. You see, she's turning around in a hurry. Oh, and then he runs. Yeah, just because the cow got a bit aggressive. Did you see that?
Yes.
Because the cow's got its youngster by its side and just shows him who's boss. Now, that was amazing. I've seen many a leopard, but I've never seen them interact with elephant that closely ever before. That was something very special, Pukela.
Yes, indeed.
So most of the surrounding veld is relatively flat, undulating but relatively flat, but we're coming to an area which is punctuated by a few granite kopjes, and there's one that is known as Mata Kanyani, and one can get out of their vehicle. It's a huge granite dome, and because you're up at a high vantage point, it's deemed to be a safe area where there's going to be no animals that can surprise you by creeping up from behind a tree or something. So yeah, they allow tourists to get out there, stretch their legs and admire the vista, and that's where we're heading. And Bukele is about to ask me what Mata Kanyani means.
Yeah, what does the Mata Kanyani mean?
Mata Kanyani is one of the local languages word for sand flea.
Okay.
Because being exposed rock, there's these little sand fleas that that hop about the place and can give you a little bit of a bite if you've got no socks on.
Okay.
So yeah, just in honor of those little critters, I call the place. You know, you can see there's a car already out there on the top.
Yes.
And it's like a rounded dome, just sticking up like half a golf ball or tennis ball in the environment, that sort of shape. There's a few trees on it as it goes up and on its crest, but most of it's that bare golden rock that gives it its name.
Mata Kanyani.
Mata Kanyani, yeah, you see it just there on the map. So we're just turning off, leaving the tar road onto a little gravel access road which is about 1 kilometer long, and as we do so, there's a herd, or collective noun for a group of zebra is a dazzle of zebra. So there's a dazzle of zebra, about 10 of them that are just feeding their way, their grazers, so they feed on grass and just chewing away what they can find. They're interspersed with a couple of the ever-present impala and
monkeys.
You see a monkey?
Yes.
Okay.
See, there's a monkey there.
Little vervet monkey scampering around, and one up in the tree there. Yeah, they'll never be alone. They'll always be in a fairly sizable group known as a troop. Yeah, but these zebra are very chilled, just grazing there nicely. And the car that was in front is turning around to come back for more. Yeah, a whole lot of monkey making their way through the undergrowth. Zebra, for those who don't know, are a type of wild horse, standing about a meter above the ground at shoulder height, and they are famous for their black and white stripes, and there's always a bit of scientific debate if it's white stripes on a black pelt or black stripes on a white pelt.
Okay.
I've heard different theories from the scientists, but I think it's I'm not going to sort of wade into that argument, but first, because we haven't really been in grassland areas, we've been in more woodland habitat up to now on this trip, we haven't had an opportunity to see any zebra, so that's our first zebra of this trip, and we'll just leave them behind. They'll still be there when we come back, because they're happily feeding. We'll make our way, following the twisty road, up to the top of the crest of the dome of Mata Kanyani. To get to the top of the Mata Kanyani dome, you can't go straight up, because then the path would be too steep and it would be a bit of an erosion nightmare. So what the engineers have done, they've created a sort of path that curls around the side of the hill, so you follow the contours at a much shallower gradient. It twists around on the right hand side, the open side. They've built a little wall, I guess, to stop any vehicles accidentally driving off the side of the hill, and on the left hand side is the hill, and as you can see now, Pukela is just bare rock. The state of the road is a bit bumpy. You can probably hear the strain on the engine as we're edging up. Coming around, there's one car that's here, Yeah, so not too much congestion, so it'll be nice to get out and admire the view.
Oh yeah, now we are here at Matikinyani Sand Flea. These are the things that you cannot do when you are up here in the hill. You may alight from your vehicle at your own risk to enjoy the magnificent view. And what are the other thing that you cannot do, Chris?
There's four little boxes. The one has a fire in it, so you can't light fires and have a barbecue or braai up here. Then there's a radio.
And you cannot put on your music.
That's right. The next one is a person shouting, so you can't make a noise.
Okay.
Disturb the other tourists and the surrounding wildlife. And the last one is a person putting litter into a bin. You may not leave any litter behind.
Do not litter.
Yeah. So those are the things. Okay, we're leaving Matikinyani. We surveyed the surrounding land. We couldn't pick up anything too exciting. What's really important about this and other get-out points on tops of mountains and viewpoints elsewhere in the park is it's an opportunity to do just that, to stretch your legs, not be confined to your vehicle, because if you're driving around in a vehicle all day looking for animals, your body can get a bit claustrophobic and frustrated. So it's nice to have the opportunity to leave one's vehicle at certain safe and designated points. But I think it's a good time for us to leave, because while when we arrived there was only one car, there's now five cars, and one of which is a small bus,
yes,
and a lot of loud people chattering away, so the experience
of
solitude
pictures.
Is not quite as pleasant as it was, although you know, there's nothing wrong with a bit of camaraderie and interaction, but for others they like the solitude. I'd probably fall more into that camp. Okay, we stopped again because there's a male kudu with a nice set of horns that's just nibbling on a fallen tree, one that's probably been pushed over by an elephant. And for those of you who don't know, the symbol of South African National Parks is the stylized kudu corp.
The kudu corp, yes.
Which is two symmetrical horns that are in a spiral shape and they twist inside themselves. And you can tell the age of a kudu by the number of twists in its horn. So this one is on its third twist, so it's quite an old one. Even though he's looking sort of quite lean and young, it doesn't look fully grown yet, so I think by the time he reaches a ripe old age he's going to have a fantastic head of horns. But yeah, you can see he's got that wet black nose that is glowing in the sort of sunlight, and he's just busily looking for whatever greenness he can find from the leaves. You see how he sort of runs his lips over the leaves and sort of sucks the leaves off, and that's why some trees have thorns as a form of protection. But this kudu is able to overcome that, and he's quite content. We've come to an open clearing where there's no vegetation. And there's a few natural depressions, and on the far side of one of the depressions is a warthog, which is a type of wild pig. It stands about half a meter above the ground, built like a tank. It's a grey colour, although it's got wispy brown hair. It sticks out from all sorts. And the reason it's called a warthog is on its face it has these massive facial warts. So it's not the prettiest of animals. They've got these very impressive tusks that curl out of the side of their mouths, and can do a lot of damage if you get on the wrong side of a warthog. The other feature that the warthog are renowned for is their little tail, because when they run they pull their skin tight and their tail comes up like a periscope. And that's believed to be how the babies are able to follow their parents, by using the tail as a sighter. But this one's not running, it's just chilling, and as you can see, he's got a whole lot of those Red Bull Oxpeckers on his back. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them. And they've just flown over. You might be able to hear them as they fly away. Okay, we've got a couple of rhino that are lying down and resting up in the heat of the day. And unusually, they're out in exposed sunlight. I seem very nonplussed about the situation. And there's a number of cars that have stopped to watch them. You can probably hear some of them idling their engines in the background. How many are there, Pukela?
I see two. There are two.
Just two?
Yes.
Looks like a mother and her calf, and the one on the right is not as big as the one near the other side, but you can see on its back it's got one of the ever-present oxpeckers feeding on the parasites. It's also a regular one, and one of the oxpeckers is actually pecking at the nostril of the one, and they've got a bit of mud on their back, so I think they've been wallowing in a mud pool and are just chilling and trying to get some shut-eye. We're walking alongside a rather impressive and magnificent elephant bull, our first one of the day. He's tall, about 4 meters at shoulder height, I would guess. 3, 4 meters. Difficult to tell. 1, 2, he's 3.5, 4 meters. And you can see that moisture around his temple, that is a hormonal condition known as MUS, where they secrete hormones, and it's related to their sort of sexuality, and they can be quite aggressive sometimes when they're in that condition. He's got a rather impressive set of tusks on him, well over a meter long. And he's just ambling along, keeping pace with a vehicle, going at 1 or 2 kilometers an hour. He's just lumbering through the felt. A magnificent, magnificent beast. We're just crossing the Biamiti River, which is dry. Most of the river is actually underground, subterranean. So there's still quite a lot of reed cover along the course of the river, and a couple of 100 meters upstream to our right, to the west, is a herd of waterbuck, which we haven't yet seen this trip. They're a shaggy grey antelope that stand over a meter above the ground at shoulder height, and the males have a very impressive U-shaped horns. Females don't have horns and look like woolly grey sheep. Sure, they're always associated with water, so you find them along the park's river courses and dams and things like that. And yeah, they're just picking their way, trying to get some fodder in the dry riverbed. Okay, we're just about to make our major pit stop on the journey at a picnic site, come tea room, called Afsal. It's so named because it was a place where, in the old days of the voortrekkers, they would unsaddle their horses and take a break here. It's got a little shop, it's got a restaurant type facilities, fast foods, and you can also hire a frying pan and cook your bacon and eggs, which is great for a bushfog breakfast or brunch. Yeah, so we're probably going to spend a few minutes here, maybe visit the toilet as well, and then be on our way again.
Cool.
We've just left Afsal, and already we're back on the game spotting trail. There's a large lone white rhino bull away to our left on the eastern side of the road. There's a few vehicles that have gone down a dirt road in that direction to have a closer look at him. And they are right up close to him. He's walking towards them at the moment. But as we speak, there's a real live zebra crossing. There's a group of zebra crossing the road in front of us. And I'm going to ask Pukele what the collective noun for a group of zebra are. And I can see the panic on his face because he knows I'm going to hit him if he gets it off.
Okay.
It's bright. You've got to put your sunglasses on. It rhymes with frazzle.
It's a... What is it, Chris?
A dazzle of zebra.
Dazzle. Okay. If it's a group of lions, it's called a pride of lions. If it's a group of impala, it's a herd of impalas. Yeah. So I'm learning.
So this is a group of zebra.
Yeah. A dazzle.
A dazzle.
Yes. A dazzle. Yeah. I was just hyping the things here. That's why I...
Okay. I'll let you off this time. And we've got another first for the trip. We're in a nice open area, so there's plenty of grazing for the grazers. We've just seen a dazzle of zebra, but now what have we got on our left-hand side?
It's a wildebeest.
A wildebeest, a blue wildebeest,
yeah.
Also known as a brindled gnu. Although it looks more like a cow, it's actually a type of antelope. And unlike some of the other ones that only the males have horns, and wildebeest, both males and females have horns. They are quite a large animal, and they're probably the favored food of lion and hyena throughout the park. They're a sort of dark gray color. From a distance in a shimmery hazy day, they look a kind of shade of blue, but gray is more their color. And they're crazy. They run around, do all funny things, and everyone thinks that they're a bit loopy. But yeah, our first one for the trip, but always a good sign. Okay, Pukele, way to our right at 3 o'clock, there's quite a small rock.
Yeah,
what do you notice about it compared to the other rocks?
That one?
Yeah. Look how it's reflecting off the sun.
Yes, it looks more like a statue or something.
It looks a bit shiny, hey?
Yeah, it's shiny.
Now, the reason it's shiny is because it's actually a rhino rubbing post. Rhinos use stones and sometimes fallen trees to rub up against to try and ease the itchiness from parasites that they might have on their skin, ticks and fleas and that sort of thing. And they rub so hard it's like sandpaper because they've got that heavy duty skin, and it rubs so much it starts to polish the stone. So the rock is probably about 3/4 of a meter to a meter high above the ground, but it's been worn smooth by the constant rubbing of rhino, probably more than one, because this area we're in right now is a very reliable place to find crashes of rhinoceros, and we saw one just back there by a few hundred meters. Good. Okay, well, just after I've said it's a really good area for rhino, not 50 meters further up the road there are some rhino lying down, just having a little afternoon siesta. It's now 1:30 in the afternoon. So it's pretty hot, and they're just lying on their sides, a pair of them, and much closer to us. I'm going to turn the engine off. Probably about 5 meters from the car are those two are rocks. The three on the left, on the right.
And the two like on the left.
Oh no, you're right, you're spot on.
Yes.
It's a covey of Swainson's spurfowl. Swainson's spurfowl are a type of ground-dwelling bird about the size of a chicken, a type of game bird, and they're just sitting down themselves. And when they lie close to the ground like that, they look like rocks, very well camouflaged. One of the birds has got up now. The adult birds have got red bear skin on their face. The rest of the plumage is a brown color. They've got a grey legs and grey beak, and they sort of just peck their way like a chicken does through the earth. They feed on the ground and pick up seeds and grubs and whatever they come across. And you see that one digging its beak in the, yes, in the earth, it's sort of scooping and looking for little stuff. There's actually six of them, two on the left, three on the right, and that one that's got up. Yeah. And it's amazing, and they look so much like rocks or that sort of thing. And yeah, usually they'd be in the shade at this time of day, so maybe not. It's not as hot a day as it seems. Although the temperature gauge says 25 degrees, so it's not cool by any means. And yeah, let's have a closer look at those rhino before we stop recording. The binocs. Again, the one looks larger than the other, so that's probably a mother with her teenage calf. So not yet fully grown, but no youngster by any means. And they're just chilling there. If you look through the binocs, you'll see looking quite content.
Yeah. Yeah, this, the one on the left, on our right hand side, is very big.
I think that's mom.
Yeah, very big.
Yeah. And we're having a good day with rhino because there's two rhino in the middle of the road. So there's a big traffic jam ahead of us. The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cars stopped already. For two adult rhino, or was it three? No, it's three. And yeah, very comfortable. It's very unusual to see them right on the road when there's so many cars around. The one that's just stepped out is perhaps slightly smaller than the other two, so probably a teenager. But yeah, the vehicles are getting very close, which is actually not all that ideal. But we're in the center of the park here, so the scourge of poaching, which we really have, is more concentrated along the sort of boundary areas of the park. Now they've finally had enough and they've trotted off into the veld, and all the cars coming out of the direction are filing past us. And yeah, the plural of rhinoceros, a group of rhino, is known as a crash of rhino.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Tanks
that can crash into each other.
Oh yeah, yeah, a crash of rhinos. Yeah, and then we're not allowed to be specific in terms of where we've seen the rhinos. Are you aware of that?
Yes, that's a good thing to bring up. In the past, on the sightings boards that each of the camps have, to let other guests know where their fellow tourists and visitors have seen various species. Because of the poaching threat, they've removed the magnets or the pins for rhino.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've noticed they're not there on the notice boards.
That's right. But a nice little family gathering of three. Good stuff. Okay, so we're moving further south towards the Camp Burgendaal, and the whole relief of the park has changed. Pokela, what do you notice when you look out compared to when we were back at Kakuza in terms of the flatness of the land?
I can see there's big mountains just in front of us, and not flat anymore. Then we have big.
That's the crucial thing. Most of Kruger is relatively flat. There's odd isolated hills here and there, but the southwestern corner of the park is in a mountainous area known as the Barberton Hills. And if you think the name of the camp Burgendaal in Afrikaans means mountain and valley, so you can get a sort of clue that we're getting to the mountainous part of the park.
Yeah.
Sliding down to the Mhlambane River, which, like a lot of the other rivers in the park, is non-perennial, so that means it doesn't flow all year round, although there is subterranean water underneath the ground, and you can tell that by the number of reeds that are in the riverbed that are still able to exist and still have quite a greenish hue despite the dry conditions. So yeah, the vegetation has changed subtly, and the mountainous regions are maybe not full of as much grazing material as around some of the other camps, but there's still quite a lot of activity. As you've seen, we've passed lots of rhino and signs of rhino. They're middens, they're little communal latrines at the side of the road, and we'll still see plenty of wildlife and have the added advantage of having wonderful scenery. Okay, we've just come over a rise, and we're now at an elevated thing descending down a hill towards Malalan Gate. Just having to pause because a young impala doe is walking across the road in front of us. But one of the negatives of this portion of the park that some people don't like is that because of the elevated view, you can see what's on the other side of the fence, so to speak, or the river. So what do you see on the horizon, Pukela?
I see... Is that the outside of the park?
Yeah.
You can see the farms there, and then the community next to the...
Look at that big thing over there that's smoking.
Yeah, I think it's a manufacturer or a mine.
Not a mine, it's those fields are all sugarcane fields.
Oh, okay.
So that's what they farm in on the south of the Crocodile River, on the southern boundary of the park.
Okay.
And that's a sugarcane factory where they process sugar. And you can see it pumps a lot of smog into the horizon.
Yeah.
So for people who come to the park because they want to experience a bit of wilderness and get away from human created environments, it's a bit of a negative for them to be able to see that, but one has to overlook that and realize that, you know, this is a gem of a place within the microcosm of an African landscape. So the park exists for animals and tourists, but outside the park, life must go on, and farming, agriculture, mining is something that takes place, and it just happens to be outside the park. And if we look a little closer, you might be able to see some of the golf courses. There's Leopard Creek is the one that's immediately on the other side of the river, the Crocodile River, owned by the Rupert family, and one of the premier golf courses in the world, and we're one of the annual prestigious golf events on the South African golfing calendar, and indeed the European Tour calendar is held. So a lot of the big names in golf come to this part of the world, and then of course in their time off they come into the park and experience a bit of the magic of Kruger. So this area has some advantages and disadvantages compared to the rest of the park. Okay, we've got a bit of a roadblock. There's a massive bull elephant. It's just lumbering its way across the road in front of us. Three cars, four cars from the other direction. Two or three from our direction. But it's being fairly chilled and it's going off straight off the road down to look for water, presumably, on the other side of the road. Big tall bugger. Finally, our first giraffe of the trip. Tallest animal in the land. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 meters tall, I would guess. Look at that long tongue sticking out and ripping the thorns and the leaves back towards itself.
Nah, that's when we're about to get to the gate. Bergendal. How far is it from here?
Yeah, it's probably about 2 or 3 kilometers from here.
Yeah.
And this is a bull giraffe. You can see by his horns. See that bald, bony part of the horns?
Yes.
Females have hair on the horns and they bend slightly inwards. Whereas males, like this old males, or sometimes buffalo, they leave the herd and go and form their own loose bachelor coalitions. And I'm sure he has some of his fellow grumpy old men not too far away. And yeah, for those who don't know what a giraffe looks like, it's, as I say, it's the tallest mammal in the world. It's got a very long, thin neck that stretches up for almost half of that, and also a very long, thin nail, where its body color is a sort of browny yellow, and covered in an intricate jigsaw pattern of pieces. It looks like all different shapes, a bit like hexagons, but not quite.